Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
We are off and rolling. Midweek Wednesday, hump day, November 12, 2025 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 99. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, Gabe?
Nothing much, man. Nothing much at all. Hanging in there. That's it.
Just hanging in there, man.
Yeah. It's doing all right.
The sports in Memphis right now, we're hanging in there.
Yeah,
we're doing our best.
Losses, one looked better than the other, but we'll talk about them. Right, we'll talk about them.
We're being brave.
Tigers on the road at Oxford. I thought there was some promise there. Now Grizzlies on the road in New York, not so promising. Although a couple of things, Cedric Howard's still great, and Vince Williams Jr.
He's back, baby. Vince Williams Jr. is back.
It's still a little bit inconsistent, but it's been more consistent lately.
It was funny because when I was watching the game last night, I sent a text to Parker and I said, well, at least we can say that Vince Williams Jr. is good at basketball again, and then immediately had the worst 2-on-1 fast break I've ever seen in my entire life. I was like, oh, maybe I should just stop talking.
Yes.
I feel like every time I ever praise Vince or point out that he's playing good basketball again, it's like he senses it and immediately does the worst thing he possibly can on the basketball court. So
yeah, and I've been waiting for the injuries to start, you know,
just
to subsiding, right? Like Ty Jerome comes back, Scottie Pippen Jr. comes back, Zach Edey comes back. He's doubtful, actually, for tonight's game against Celtics. So he's got an upgrade. He's been playing 5-on-5s. Looks like he's very close to return. So I've been hoping that those injuries subsiding will help the Grizzlies. And I think they'll help the Grizzlies to a certain extent. But I think all of that is for naught unless Ja Morant starts to find his way.
That is correct.
It's really tough for him. And there's some reasons to point out that we will get to here in just a bit. But, my gosh, career low from the field, career low from three, and it just won't get better. You know what I mean? It will not, under any circumstances, get better.
Hey, but he is an ace from the free throw line.
Sure. Sure. Is he leading the league still?
He might be. He's shooting like 93% from the line.
Yeah, I don't know if that's league high because Steph Curry's always at like 95.
Steph's been hurt, though. Yeah. So I don't know
He may not qualify.
Right.
Yeah.
Ja's shooting 95.4% from the free throw line. Oh, my God.
Well, that's good.
That's good.
But does that offset 13% from three, asking for a friend?
If he was SGA, it would.
It may. Yeah.
God, if he had SGA's whistle, he'd score 40 a game.
Yeah. Now we have 2 hours of talk again on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM ESPN. And yours truly, we're going to pass you off to Grizzlies on the road against the Celtics. What I think should be a winnable ball game? Question mark.
Maybe.
Winnable ball game.
Maybe.
Because I don't think the next two are that winnable. According to ESPN, I talked about it before this four-game road trip. Three of the four games were, according to ESPN, under 30% chance to win for the Grizzlies. Next two are that. This is the game that's about a 50-50 shot. You have an opportunity tonight against a Celtics team who's not been that great. No Jason Tatum. We know that. Bigs, not there, non-existent. They don't have a very, very good roster. And I know you don't right now, considering the injuries, if you're the Grizzlies, but you got to find some win somewhere in this stretch. And I feel like tonight is an opportunity for them. So we'll pass you off to that at 6:00. John Rosa will be on the pregame, and then at 6:30 tip, we will have Eric Hasseltine on the call. As the show goes, generally on a Wednesday. We have overreaction, not an overreaction off the top. I have to get to my post week 10 NFL power rankings. As far as guests are concerned, Colton Denning and David Cobb. Colton, because we don't have a third hour, usually at 6, he's at 4:30 today, bottom half of this hour, and then 5 o'clock. David Cobb will join the show, and I have to get some questions out there about Memphis basketball and, of course, the college football playoff rankings. By the way, before we get into all that, college football playoff rankings, any overwhelming complaints,
no.
Issues?
It was
concerns?
I don't know if concerns is
okay,
the right word.
Okay, I was just saying. I was just asking.
It felt expected.
Yeah.
There was nothing surprising, I would say, in the college football playoff rankings.
Yes. And obviously the big complaint from everybody, it seems, is, and really the ACC in Miami. It's Miami being ranked below Notre Dame. But I kind of want to sort through that again today using another team.
Well, I guess my only gripe would be like, why'd South Florida get in this week and Memphis didn't last week? That was a bit annoying. But like, yeah, whatever. At least they're in.
I don't.
Yeah, but it doesn't bother me. It's one of those where it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Honestly, to me, that felt like we screwed up last week, so we need to make sure that we put somebody in this week.
I go the other way. I'm just glad they put a group of five team in.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm just like, oh, man, couldn't have been Memphis last week.
Yeah, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. Hate to say it.
Wouldn't have mattered.
Wouldn't have mattered.
I don't know, Gabe.
Lick.
Maybe having that number next to their name would have given them that additional
boost
they needed.
You know what
they
say about championship fighters?
It would have locked them in to not have that penalty.
Well, that's the thing. Like they say, you know, championship fighters like boxers and UFC fighters, when you actually get the belt, you get 30% better. That's what they always say. So maybe it would have changed something. Maybe.
Sure.
But I doubt it. Now let's go ahead and do what we do to start a Wednesday show. That would be get to overreaction. Not an overreaction.
Gabe, I have some positive Memphis Grizzlies injury news.
Say it quick before it goes away.
Zach Edey has been upgraded to doubtful headed into tonight's game in Boston. Zach Edey's return will solve some of the Grizzlies' problems. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Thank you for saying some, so I can say not an overreaction. He will solve some things for the Grizzlies. Rebounding will be a lot easier with Zach Edey on the floor. He's a guy who can bring in double-digit rebounds per night, and he's one of the best offensive rebounders in the NBA. Also, I think, you know, when you look at Ja and his play, spacing's been a big issue for him, right? He's not able to get into the paint at a high level. I'll bring up a stat from Nekias Duncan, who does really good work here in just a moment. But getting a screen setter that can really create space for you, not named Jock Landale, I think that will help pretty dramatically. Because I don't really see another screen setter on this team at this moment that can do what Zach Edey does for Ja Morant. And also, you have a real, real role threat at the rim for Ja Morant, so he can drop it off, he can throw a lob, he can do some different things with Zach Edey toward the rim. And we know this team spams on-ball screens pretty consistently in Tomas Isalo's system. So I think that will help pretty dramatically off top. You'll see some big differences in flow and execution from Ja Morant. Now, the things that won't help is the lack of shooting and the lack of spacing. This team, offensively, they just don't have guys living up to the hype shooting the ball. Now, I think Jalen Wells had a better game last night, but he has not been great. KCP. Ugh.
Yikes.
He can only play 15 minutes a night, really, at this point, because he's not really playable. Because defensively, you don't really see that much upside. And offensively, not hitting the shots, not really finding opportunities for himself. You know, you just keep going down the roster. Like, your best shooters, really, at this point, Cam Spencer and Cedric Coward, both those guys coming off the bench. So I think that is something I'm still going to have to look for. And I want to ask you, Connor, this question, because this is the stat from Nekias Duncan, who covers the NBA and does a really good job with, like, film study and all that. I want to ask you, like, what you more blame this on. Ja Morant has seen a help defender or multiple help defenders on 86.5% of his drives.
What do I blame it on?
Well, but per second spectrum. That is the top mark in the league among 41 players that have logged at least 100 drives to this point. Like, is that more on, and obviously it's a little bit of both, but is that the lack of, you know, screen setting, ability to set screens with Zach Edey off the floor, or is that just strictly three-point shooting is not respected by opponents, and they're not spacing the floor well?
It's that one.
Okay.
It's that one. They don't have any three-point shooting. They don't have any respectable three-point shooters out there. Jaren, he can knock down a three. Jalen can knock down a three, but they haven't been doing it at a high level this season. KCP is a non-factor right now out there on the basketball court on the offensive end. Cedric Howard is somebody that you have to pay attention to, and it's one of the main reasons he should start, to be quite honest. I know that he went 0 for 5 from 3 last night, but he's been a pretty consistent shooter.
He still affects the game.
He has been a consistent shooter for the Grizzlies this season. And to be honest, man, last night when I was watching the game, I was asking myself, like, why are we still running out this starting lineup? It doesn't make sense to me why he just keeps running out this lineup. It doesn't make any sense right now.
What would be said is we have to stagger minutes from our best players.
Why?
If Cedric Howard is starting on the bench and he's still getting starter minutes, how much of a complaint should you have? Yada, yada, yada. It's sort of the same idea of John, Jaren, and the lack of minutes they've had together on the floor, which we still complain about. But I think that would be the answer you would get.
I think it's a dumb one. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Play and start your best players.
Play and start your best players. Just do it. Play them 35 minutes. Every single team that you're playing is playing their stars 35 minutes. And guess what? They're destroying you in those minutes. When your stars aren't on the court, they're killing you. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not surprised that some of the Grizzlies are finding it difficult to find a shooting rhythm when they're not getting consistent minutes out there. They don't have enough time to get into a rhythm. And when they do get into a rhythm finally, or they finally catch fire, they're being pulled out no matter what because there's no feel of the game right now. Yeah. Cedric Howard needs to start. And to be quite honest, just looking at how much Wells and KCP have kind of been struggling right now, I would consider starting Santi right now too. It just put your best guys in to start the game, let them play a long time together, and just see what happens. I understand that you have to stagger minutes, but you can stagger minutes with having a couple of your guys still on the court and give the others respite. Cedric Howard, I'm sure, can play a ton of minutes now at the age that he is. He's going to be fine.
And let's just be honest about the situation. You don't have to stagger as much as is being sort of put out there right now.
No, you don't.
I watched Tyrese Maxey in a 76ers uniform play about 41 minutes.
I watched Jalen Brunson play 36, OG play 36, and Mikal Bridges play 38. Jaren, and Cedric do those minutes?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
And by the way, those numbers are with the Knicks having a pretty substantial lead for most of the game, so you can sort of relax, and you don't have to throw them into the game immediately.
This is a novel concept for the Memphis Grizzlies the last few years, and just bear with me when I say it. When you have a lead in a basketball game, are you ready for this? Leave your guys in. Maybe, just maybe, you don't lose that lead. And maybe, maybe, you don't have to bring your guys back into panic when that lead has shrunk from double digits to, I don't know, 4 points. It's a crazy idea.
That first half last night was so depressing.
It was awful.
It was
that
awful
first quarter was horrific.
Yes.
Horrific.
Again, like, I get back to it, and without Ja doing anything of substance offensively right now, I just don't know what the redeeming quality of this team is. I'm sorry. That's just how I feel. I think that's how most fans feel. I don't see it. I don't see an identity. I don't really see anything moving in the right direction. And for Ja, I think Zach Edey coming back will help.
Yes.
But it ain't going to fix everything.
No.
You don't just – when you're shooting 35% from the field and 16% from three in this type of sample size of 12 games, you have some work to do before you get back to your full self.
Yeah, and to be honest, last night, you know, Ja brought up the rebounding, but the rebounding wasn't the issue in last night's game. Like, that, it was the turnovers. It's also the turnovers. They are playing so disjointed.
20
on the offensive
turnovers
end.
And I think 30 points to 8 off those turnovers. That's what it was last night. That's just ridiculous. It's, as an NBA franchise, it's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
Yeah,
and I know the Knicks are. They have a lot of good defensive players, and I think even last year when we watched this Grizzlies team, or last year's Grizzlies team against this Knicks team, they had their turnover issues.
And, yes,
but. You know that going into the game, you watch film, figure it out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, as I've been watching this team, I understand Zach Edey's about to come back, so the starting lineup's going to change and should change. Like, Jock, he doesn't need to be starting right now. He's a fine backup big to have, fine at the very most. But Zach Edey will be your starting center. But until he comes back, like, I just wouldn't hate seeing Ja, Wells, Coward, Santi, and Jaren. Just run that out there and see what happens. Yeah. Just run them out there and play them for 35 minutes and see what happens.
Yes, until Edey gets back on the floor.
Because it's like you said, there's just no identity to this team right now. And Ja's being doubled every time he touches the ball. Every time Jaren touches the ball, he's being doubled. A lot of Jaren's turnovers are coming because they're double-teaming him because they don't respect anybody.
It's,
Ja doesn't have enough three-point shooting to help out that spacing.
The game script against teams above 500 or teams for the Pulse is really the exact same every game. First quarter, you run out that starting lineup, you're at a deficit, but then you have to take those guys out and give them some rest so your backups come in, and then the opposing team's lead grows and grows and grows. Then you have to try to fight back in the third quarter with your starting lineup. It plays the exact same way every single time. They get it to within striking distance at points in the second half, but you feel as if, you don't ever feel as if they're going to get back into that game and ultimately win it.
These runs that they've had toward the ends of games, which are, I don't even think are moral victories at this point because of how it looks out there. I think that they are, yes, the Grizzlies are trying, but a lot of it is because the other teams are up by so big, they're like, whatever. And they kind of take their foot off the gas for a second. Grizzlies go on like a 12-point run, and then as soon as they engage again, the game's over.
Yep.
And they extend that lead back. Like that, it is that you are being outplayed, you're being outcoached. And a lot of it is the rotations, but nothing is going to be fixed unless your superstar player plays like a superstar. If Ja's going to shoot the way he's shooting, if he's going to be given the effort that he's given, you're going to lose. Nothing's going to change there. Jaren needs more opportunities on offense. That's a coach thing. The rotations need to be better. That's a coach thing. Ja's play, that's a Ja thing.
Yep.
Ja's got to be better for this team to win basketball games, period.
Yep.
It's got to happen. The only positives so far of this Grizzly season, in my opinion, Cedric Coward's for real. He's second in the rookie ladder.
Second in the Kia rookie ladder behind Con Knipple.
And he should be number one. I mean, dude, they've been going crazy this week. You know, it should VJ. Cooper Flagg being number three is still silly. It should be VJ number three.
VJ Edgecombe, I thought, would have been number one when I originally started.
Well, Con's been going crazy.
But VJ, since that first week of the season, has been slowing down.
Con Knipple's been going nuts. He's been unbelievable for the Hornets. And everybody freaked out when he got drafted where he did, but he did for a reason. That dude is an absolute...
What surprised me about him is like his ability to get his teammates involved.
Playmaking
kind of, because Cooper Flagg did a lot of that, and then you had Tyrese Proctor last year for that Duke team do a lot of that. He didn't really get asked to do that. He was more of a spot up shooter and an offensive weapon for that team. Didn't really have to get his teammates involved, but you're seeing it with the Hornets.
Other two positives though, Cam Spencer I think is a for real NBA player that deserves rotation minutes. When everybody's healthy again, I think that you can find some room for Cam. He hunts shots out there. He's a killer. Shoots well from three. Looks to take shots, too. That is what is important. We always complain for the last few years that Luke, even though he is a premier three-point shooter, just never actually shot the basketball.
Yep.
Cam hunts shots. That's good. And then Vince looking like an NBA player again matters. That is going to matter when your team is hopefully healthy. But Zach Edey coming back, like you said, some of the issues are going to be fixed. Rebounding will be more consistent. Rim protection will be more consistent. Screen setting will certainly be better, and it will probably save Jaren Jackson Jr. some fouls. But it's not going to fix everything.
Nope.
It's just not. All right. Next one. Tiger basketball lost 83-77 on the road in Oxford last night. They got some production from a couple of unlikely sources. Curtis Givens had 20 and Ashton Hardaway had 16, even in a loss. Last night was their best performance to date. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
So obviously we're counting the four-game sample size, including the exhibition games. I'm going to say not an overreaction. I thought there was a lot of positive to take away from that game last night. Only seven turnovers, so that was fun to watch. They just did not turn the ball over very much. Now, Ole Miss is not a pressure team defensively, necessarily. You would like to see Memphis, press them a little bit more with how much they extend their defense and get some more turnovers on them if they're only having seven, but only seven turnovers is nice. I thought they had some timely shot-making in the second half. I really do. They offensively found their spots, made some things happen. I thought Quante Barry, while it wasn't game one, the first game, I thought he had some moments. Curtis Givens, the ability to get to 20 points, he showed it. He showed it. Now we want to see that more consistently. Doug McDaniel, like setting the table, doing some things for his teammates. I really, really think he is one of the premier point guards in certainly in the conference, maybe in college basketball, but 7 assists, 3 turnovers, 15 points. He had 7 rebounds as well. I Zach Davis, I know at the end of the game, this is just what I noticed. I felt like he and really the rest of the roster were taking too many gambles on trying to steal passes, do some things like that against Ole Miss, and he fouled a little bit much. But Zach Davis, whenever he gets in there, I like his energy on the defensive end. He tries to create some things for that team, and we know that Penny Hardaway teams pride themselves on creating opportunities using defense. And I think Zach Davis will be a guy to keep an eye on as the season goes along. So I think there's some things to build off of. But last night, you know, they just couldn't keep down Ilias Camerdine. He was awesome, and he's played, what, 6 years of pro basketball over in France before he came over, 26 points, 11 for 14 from the field, 3 for 4 from 3. I mean, he was just better than anybody else on the floor last night. And I thought the Tigers, while they tried to do some things to throw him off in the second half, he sort of kept up his production. And I think that's an experience thing. And I think there's some guys on this Memphis roster who still need experience playing in the roles that they're playing right this second. But I thought they fought. I thought it was a good showing for Curtis Givens and Ashton Hardaway, Doug McDaniel as well. I will say this, though. When we looked at this roster and how it was being put together in the offseason, it was Doug McDaniel and Aaron Bradshaw, really, as the centerpieces. And I get it's a two-game regular season sample size from Aaron Bradshaw. But I'm sorry, guys. He doesn't look like he's all there. He feels like the piece that could potentially swing this team and give this team a bump and lift their ceiling. And I watch him out there, and I just don't see it. You may ask me what it is. I don't see anything from the guy. Not an overly good rebounder. Defensively, not much of a rim protector.
He had one rebound.
He does not run 20 minutes. He does not run the floor as well as I thought. A little bit awkward running. You know, stretching out to the three-point line is something he likes to do, but I don't know how good of a three-point shooter he is. He's definitely not physical. Like, I'm sorry. I know he was the big, you know, addition, supposed to be a big for this team. I mean, he was preseason first team all conference for the American. It's two games. He's got a long season ahead. I don't see it at all.
I've never seen a 7-footer get so lost out there on the court. Like I don't even notice him
at all.
He's 7 feet tall, and I don't even notice him. That's an issue.
I mean, I just think there's better players on this
Doug
team.
Doug McDaniel's
right now
a better center for the Memphis Tigers right now than Aaron Bradshaw.
I'm not trying to, you know, make this two-game sample size the whole story on Aaron Bradshaw. But when I just watch him visibly and I try to pick him out on the floor, I see nothing. And maybe that's injuries. Maybe he's still trying to fight back. Maybe he's lost confidence that he needs to gain back. There's a lot of things, because once upon a time, this was a 5-star McDonald's All-American.
Right.
I fully understand that. But I can't be the only one who watches him play and says, this is not a former 5-star McDonald's All-American. This is not a guy who's going to make a tremendous impact for this team.
We have no choice but to hope he finds it.
You hope. Because he's the guy, in my opinion, who could lift this ceiling.
Yeah.
But until I see something from him of substance, I'm going to feel like I do right this second.
Right. Next one. Matt Stafford is the NFL MVP. Overreaction, not overreaction.
Okay, now this one, you know, I want to say, if Jonathan Taylor keeps doing what he does, he should be the NFL MVP. He has 17 touchdowns, 15 rushing touchdowns. He actually, I believe, broke Edgerrin James' single season.
He did.
Rushing touchdown record, and it's week 11, guys. Like, he's ridiculous, and he's already over 1,000 yards. I saw this. He's fourth all-time in yards per game among qualifying running backs, fourth all-time at 92.5 yards per game. And he could
Is that career or season?
That's for a career.
Oh, wow.
For a career. So he's rising up. He could potentially catch number three here relatively soon if he continues to have this type of production. So I think that Jonathan Taylor, if he continues this production with the Colts, should be the most valuable player, because that Colts team is not who they are at 8-2 without him.
Correct.
But I live in reality. And reality is the MVP is a quarterback award. And the best quarterback in the National Football League, without question, is Matt Stafford. So it's not an overreaction. Now, Drake May could come along and you know, continue doing what he's doing, and certainly, he could be a guy who wins this if Matt Stafford has a bit of a fall off. But Matt Stafford is completing 70% of his passes, He is averaging at this point somewhere around 280 some odd or 270 yards per game, 25 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And that Rams team is sitting there at 7-2. And I don't know if a lot of people thought they'd be in this position at this point in the season. So I leads the league in passing yards, leads the league in passing touchdowns. Matt Stafford is the MVP as of right this second, but that's subject to change. But again, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that we've strayed so far away from what the award is actually supposed to be for. It's supposed to be for the most valuable player in the National Football League. Not the most valuable quarterback, not the best quarterback, the most valuable player. I think the most valuable player is Jonathan Taylor, but I think the most valuable quarterback is Matt Stafford. So ultimately, that's where I lean to. Hey, he's probably the front runner for the award right this second.
Some of the coolest sports videos you can watch right now out there, whether it's on TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, there's compilations of Matthew Stafford this season from behind. Yes. The angles of some of his throws defy physics. I don't understand.
The no-look dig he threw to Davante Adams a couple of weeks ago.
It's insane.
Dot without, again, no look. It was, what, 35 yards downfield on a rope?
It's not even...
In between a safety and a corner sitting?
Those are impressive. But I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback throw a two-seam fastball. Like, with the football. He throws two seams. I don't understand how he does it. It defies all laws of physics, the way he gets these footballs into the pockets.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable to watch. So, I agree with you. I think Jonathan Taylor should be the MVP. But this is a quarterback award.
But again,
now.
Me and you live in reality. Correct. And reality is best quarterback wins this award, and that's Matt Stafford.
Right. All right, final one. Notre Dame remained ahead of Miami, who they lost to head-to-head in week one. Notre Dame came in at number 9 in the field of 12, and Miami came in at number 15 and remains out of the field. Miami is being treated unfairly. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Overreaction, 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 overreaction. I talked about it a lot yesterday, but there's more pressing issues within the week two of the college football playoff rankings. One being Utah. Utah at number 13. What has Utah done of substance this year? They've played Texas Tech, who's ranked higher than them in the Big 12, and is ranked higher than Ole Miss. I'll get to that in a second. But they got killed. And outside of that, lost another game and... They haven't beaten anybody. I think they've beaten one team inside the top 50 of ESPN's FPI and S&P Plus. That's it. All the other teams are far outside of the top 50. So I don't know what on their resume is particularly tantalizing, what is really impressing the committee right this second. Also, the Ole Miss-Texas Tech thing. What am I missing? Why would – not that it matters in any dramatic fashion – but what am I missing? Ole Miss has a better strength of schedule per every single site that does strength of schedule is better. They both have one loss. Ole Miss's strength of record is 3 spots higher than Texas Tech's, yet Texas Tech is 1 spot over Ole Miss. Someone explain that to me like I'm 5 years old. I don't get it at all. Are we talking margin of victory maybe? Is that something that you would look at? I don't know. I don't know if you should. We're talking SEC schedule versus Big 12 schedule, so I don't know if margin of victory should propel Texas Tech above Ole Miss, especially considering they both have one loss. Just bizarre. But back to the Miami thing. I mentioned it yesterday. You have yourself to blame. You've lost 2 games in 4 weeks to unranked opponents. I guess one of them was ranked. At this point, and I'll mention that in a second, but you lost 2 games in 4 weeks. You lost 2 games in 3 weeks. You played Notre Dame first game of the year, won by 3 at your home on your home field when they didn't have any film on you. Clearly, the film has gotten out on you, and people are starting to realize how to defend you and how to get after Carson Beck. So I think it would be completely different had you played them this week or next week or going into the future. But, you know, when you just sort of dig down deep, there's a lot of questions about head-to-head. You know, how much should head-to-head matter? And we have the sound pulled up. We have Joel Klatt. This was Joel Klatt's argument as to, you know, why Miami should be ranked ahead of Notre Dame. It's very, you know, it's the obvious case, but let's go ahead and take a listen.
If it comes down to a discussion and a debate between Miami and Notre Dame, Miami should go to the playoff. I do not care what they have looked like. You have to honor a direct head-to-head matchup, or else what are we doing?
Okay.
What are we doing? You have to honor BYU's win over Utah. You know, that being said, I know there's going to be a lot of people that are like, well, you have Georgia over Alabama in your rankings. Yeah, but I'm not the committee. And I don't have to decide on the last playoff spot.
No, it don't matter. It's fine. I can do whatever I want.
Where you're getting in or being left at home. And those two teams played. You have to honor the direct comparison game that was played. You just have to. So, Miami. What do we do with Miami? Miami's got to hope that Texas falls off. They've got to hope.
You can cut it off now. But here's the quote. I do not care what they've looked like. You have to honor a direct head-to-head matchup, or else what are we doing? That is a fun quote. For one reason, especially when it relates to Miami. Miami lost at home to Louisville 4 weeks ago. Louisville is 7-2. Miami is, you guessed it, 7-2. So by that logic, Joel, should Louisville, who's number 20, be ahead of Miami, who's number 15, and ultimately be in the college football playoff? I'm asking. I'm not, you know, saying that they should, not making any declarative statements. But going back to the quote, I do not care what they've looked like. You have to honor a direct head-to-head matchup, or else what are we doing? Okay, if I'm going by that logic, Louisville should be in the college football playoff and ahead of Miami because they won 4 weeks ago at their place. And I heard some other people make the argument, well, that's not the same thing. Well, that's convenient, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's convenient that that's not the same thing as Miami over Notre Dame. And they would say, well, you know, the best win that Miami had is better than the best win that Louisville had. Well, Louisville beat you, and you want Miami to be ahead of Notre Dame, so you kind of, in turn, think that Miami's a better win than a win against Notre Dame, no? There's just a lot of hypocrisy and a lot of finger-pointing in this argument, and I'm not with it. I'm done with it.
My favorite part of that entire clip is as soon as he said what he said, yeah, he realized what his rankings yeah were, and that long pause you heard was the realization of, I'm not even following my own logic.
Yes.
And then it'd
but
be
then
like,
he's like, I'm not the committee.
But my rankings don't matter. So I need the committee to follow my logic, but I'm not going to follow my own logic.
Listen, if you think that Miami should be a college football playoff team, that's fine. I'm cool with that. But to act as if a head-to-head in week one needs to be the end-all be-all of ranking Notre Dame and Miami is so beyond the truth of what we're living right now. Notre Dame has won 7 straight games. Miami blew their season, blew their chance at an ACC title in 3 weeks. Again, instead of pointing the finger at Notre Dame and the committee, if you're an ACC or Miami fan, point it at Carson Beck and Mario Cristobal for screwing the season. For not making it easy. You could have left no doubt. You had the opportunity to do so. And you didn't.
Well, this is only...
Stop pointing the finger everywhere else but yourself. That's my problem.
This is also one of those arguments that wants you to forget. They also lost to SMU.
Yeah.
That also happened. It wasn't just... Everybody's like, well, Louisville's a good football... Okay? SMU's middle of the pack. If you want to be a college football playoff team, you're not losing to SMU.
And they did that in a 3-week span. They lost both those games in a 3-week span. And also people would say, well, Louisville's losses. They just lost to Cal. Yeah, Cal's a winning team. And they also lost to Virginia. Both those games were lost in overtime.
You also know what we're not doing? Saying that Louisville should be a college football playoff team.
Yeah, I don't even think they should be ranked ahead of Miami.
Right.
Even though they have the same record and they beat Miami head-to-head at Miami. I just... Listen, man.
There is a way to honor head-to-head while also still being realistic about positioning.
You have to create realistic expectations. And I don't think it's a realistic expectation to think Miami should be ranked over Notre Dame. I just don't. Even though they won week one, I get it. You're on your home field, you won by three against a brand-new quarterback. That team's gone on to win seven straight. You've gone on to lose two of your last four. I just can't feel bad for you, and I can't get on your side. I can't. You are the most talented team in that conference, bar none. And that conference, can we be completely honest, stinks this year.
Georgia Tech is at the top.
It's awful. And I don't want to hate on Georgia Tech.
No, it's not hating.
But Duke has the second best shot to make the ACC title game, and they're 5-4. That conference stinks. And you have no chance, really, of winning it unless you get a bunch of help from the people ahead of you. If you can't go and win the ACC title game, if you can't win the ACC, I don't know if you should be in the college football playoff in the year 2025.
I think that's fair.
That's how I feel.
I think that's fair.
Fair or unfair, whatever. I don't really care. I just look at all the arguments that are being made, and I just think they're hypocritical. Because the same Miami fans that say that the head-to-head with Notre Dame should matter, say that the head-to-head with Louisville shouldn't. And they say that's a different scenario altogether. Is it? Is it a different scenario?
We must honor head-to-head matchups. Well, what about this matchup? Not that one.
Not that one. You can't cherry-pick.
Only the one that makes my argument make sense.
Yeah, don't cherry-pick what head-to-head matchups matter.
How dare you use my logic against me?
Yeah, it's just, it's a lot and too much. And here's the thing, Miami still, Joe Klatt sort of went into it, they're ranked number 15. They still have a shot
they still
to
got
get
a shot.
Into the college
yeah.
football playoff as an
These teams
large.
Could stumble.
And I don't know why they're complaining about where Notre Dame's at when you probably should have played yourself out of the college football playoff the last 4 weeks with those two losses. And you still have an opportunity. You just have to have, you just need help.
I would argue that is showing that their head-to-head matchup against Notre Dame does matter.
That's what I'm saying. I think the College Football Playoff Committee is actually showing you a decent amount of respect.
Yeah.
Stop worrying about where Notre Dame is. Worry about yourself. Seriously. Sometimes you need to look inward. Look in a mirror before you look out a window. That's the advice I'd give to Miami at this moment. But let's go ahead and grab our first break today. When we come back, more of this and college football with Colton Denning.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Colton Denning is owner of Two Stripes CPD, college football. He covers it. Make sure you go subscribe to Two Stripes CPD. Also, youtube.com/Colton Denning. Go subscribe to his YouTube channel. Hits of the Week get posted every single week on X Dubsco. Colt, what's happening? How are you?
I got a case of the man flu, Gabe. I can't even lie. So you already know what it's like over here. I'm going through it right now, but we're fighting through it, and we're excited for this weekend, baby.
The man flu, just like a cold? In other words?
Oh, yeah. Just a simple cold, but it feels like the worst day of my life.
Okay.
So, you know.
Yeah, I get you. It's maybe a little seasonal depression alongside the man flu. That's how you're feeling
right
now?
Well, 100%. You know what it was? I think it was I watched too much of that Eagles-Packers game.
Oh,
and my
God,
body was just like,
oh, my God. Yeah.
My body was just like, no, you're not built for this. You can't watch the NFL, son. That's it for you.
Yeah. Now, know what I am taking some joy in is watching Miami fans and the ACC the ACC putting out a social media post of a blind resume between Notre Dame and Miami. I love seeing them reel a little bit and feel the pressure. I mean, it is pretty phenomenal. Now, how do you feel about the ongoing conversation? I know we talked about it last week with the first iteration of the college football playoff rankings, but we have the second week, same thing. Miami's at 15, Notre Dame's at 9, even though Miami beat them week one on their home field by 3. How do you feel about the continued sort of lifting up of Notre Dame and dropping down of Miami by the college football playoff committee?
Well, this is exactly what we talked about a few weeks ago, right? Like, you could see this impending problem, if that's what you want to call it, coming from a mile away. And it's honestly pretty similar to what it was last year when that Notre Dame had that early loss against Northern Illinois, and they were kind of just out of sight, out of mind for everybody, because leading up to the 12-team playoff, and every other year you'd be like, oh, they're done. There's no way they're coming back from that. And then as the season progressed, it was like, uh-oh, we're going to have to talk about Notre Dame. And this just feels kind of like the same thing. And now that Miami has two losses to add to the equation, and the top of the ACC is such a mess, now it just throws Notre Dame into that as well. And it'll resolve itself. It always does. It feels like we have these discussions every year, no matter what the format is, where it's like there's going to be too many teams. There's not enough spots. There's always enough spots. So I think it'll resolve itself. And, too, like if you're a Miami fan or a Notre Dame fan, especially if you're a Miami fan, I don't know how you can feel comfortable about, like, oh, well, it's our spot anyway. Like, yeah, you guys lost to SMU a few weeks ago. Like, you shouldn't feel awesome about winning these next three games with what we've seen.
And that's what I've been trying to tell them. I'm saying, when you go through a breakup every once in a while, you say, hey, focus on yourself for a little bit. That's how I feel about Miami and ACC fans. Focus on yourself, especially with the ACC. That last weekend of football was about as disastrous as it could have been.
Yeah, and, you know, even if overlooking the NC State game and the Virginia Tech game on the road in a couple of weeks for Miami, that road game to end the season at a Pitt team who is now ranked and behind that freshman quarterback in Mason Heinschel looks pretty damn good and pretty formidable. Like, it's not a solid road for them, or talking about Pitt, Notre Dame, who they face here in a couple of days. So Pitt could be the answer to all of our problems.
Dave. They could be, but did you see what Pat Narduzzi said this week? I don't care about the game against Notre Dame. We could lose by 100 as long as I could trade that off for two wins in conference to end the season. Oh, God, what'd you think about that?
One of my buddies, we're big hockey fans. He has a great line from the movie Miracle, and it's not even the actual line from the movie. It's, Herb Brooks is talking to the players in the locker room, and he's telling the dude who has the broken leg, like, you're not a hockey player, you can't go out there, and he's trying to fire the team up. And then he leaves the room, and he's like, you think that'll get him going?
Yeah.
And I was like, is that Pat Narduzzi's way of being like, hey, boys, like, you're probably going to lose this week. I don't know. It's kind of up to you guys. Like, I don't know what else that could be other than just sort of psychological warfare.
Maybe it's like trying to take pressure off his team. Maybe.
Maybe.
I heard that case made today.
We've seen, and two for Pitt, it's like they're in this race too. And, I mean, even though it is, technically a non-conference game, you want to give yourself as much available room. You don't want to give anything to the committee that is essentially a loss if you're Pitt. So it's like he can say, oh, well, we could still get to the ACC title game and I guess get the auto bid if we win. But, like, you want to give yourself as much room as possible too.
And – Colton, I think you and I, we both appreciate head-to-head for what it's worth. And I think in a perfect world, everyone who wins head-to-head should be ranked ahead of the person that they beat, the program that they beat. But Miami claiming the head-to-head over Notre Dame brings up another question within conference with a team that they lost to at home in Louisville. They both have two losses. Louisville's ranked 20. Miami's ranked 15. So Miami fans, what I've noticed is they will talk about how the head-to-head should matter more against Notre Dame, but when you bring up Louisville, who has the same amount of losses and they beat them at their place, they say, well, that's not the same thing. Well, is it not? It seems like it is the same thing to me.
It has to be. Because what other metric do we have other than, like, all of these numbers are great and the eye test is great and we all have our opinions, but the numbers – for as advanced as they've become, they still are just another tool. They're not perfect. So at the end of the day, the thing that we can go off of that is unbiased, that we see also with our own eyes, are the results on the field. And when you have these teams with the same records and you say, okay, well, that one beat the other one, that's not an opinion. That's not looking and trying to shift numbers to whatever argument you want to make. That's a clear, concise, and concrete piece of evidence we can look to it. Hey, that's something that happened on the field.
Yeah, what did you think about the close shaves last weekend with, you know, you had Oregon barely sneak out of Iowa with a win, and then you had Indiana barely sneak out of Penn State with a win. I mean, do you just chalk that up to Big Ten schedule? You know, rough and tumble Big Ten. You know, guys, you know, teams playing like it's their Super Bowl, or like what do you look at that as? Right? Like, do you feel like these teams are gettable? Indiana and Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely, they're gettable. I think they're beatable. But I think it's whatever you want to craft it to. I would be a little more worried about the Indiana one because it was such a close shave. I expected Oregon to go in there and be in for an absolute
war,
just dogfight. Yeah, that was going into the Thunderdome. And for me, like, you know me, man. I'll hate on Oregon at the drop of a hat. But for them, their goal was to just get into Iowa and get out with a win. And that's exactly what they did. And they did it without their star freshman receiver in DeCorian Moore. So I thought that was super impressive. The end of the game, you had Dante Moore with one of the best throws of the season.
Yeah,
absolute laser in the rain. And you get out of there with a win. And can you make it to be like, oh, you know, Oregon isn't that good because they barely beat an Iowa team, and same for Indiana, absolutely. And Ken, on the flip side of that, you can also be like, they showed championship medal. So again, it's just whatever you want to kind of put, whatever bucket you want to put it into. But for me, it's really at this point of the season, we're deep into it enough now where you just got to win, man, especially if you're these top teams. The time for style points, it's still nice. It's great to win by 30-plus points and to have a statement win, kind of like Texas Tech got over BYU at home with how their defense played. But you'd rather have a win than a loss at this point. So I think you just got to win the games now.
Yeah, Texas Tech's defense is for real, huh? Jacob Rodriguez, David Bailey, those guys are unbelievable, man. And I know you made the case. You said they should be, you know, in that Heisman running. Like, they should get some look, some consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've just been force-fed, even dating back, you know, to the offseason, we've just been force-fed quarterback talk all season. And there's some quarterbacks, Julian Sand from Ohio State, Fernando Mendoza for Indiana, Marcel Reed for Texas A&M, who are having phenomenal seasons. But then you watch a team like Texas Tech and David Bailey, who's just a game wrecker each week. And then you have behind him and Jacob Rodriguez, the linebacker, who is getting to the quarterback. He's covering guys. He's forcing fumbles. He's recovering fumbles. He's making interceptions. He's scoring touchdowns. He's doing all of these things. And it's just so interesting to watch that with Texas Tech now for people our age, where it's like you grew up on the air raid and you grew up on the Crabtrees and what they were able to do offensively. And this team has a pretty solid offense, but it's their defense that's kind of carrying them, and we saw that against BYU. So I'm really intrigued to see how Texas Tech in particular finishes out the season, and if they do win out and win the Big 12, what it will look like for those two in terms of Heisman votes. Because I don't think the general consensus, like, it's not going to be with me where I think those guys should be in the top five, but at the very least, they should get some top 10 consideration.
All right, now, I gave my thoughts on this yesterday, but Lane Kiffin, as he does, he sort of, you know, he likes to upset the apple cart. He likes to give his takes out. But he was talking about A&M at number three, and they came in at number three in the college football playoff rankings for the second straight week, behind Indiana at number two and Ohio State at number one. All teams are undefeated, and A&M's coming off a win against Mizzou, 38-17. They ran away with it. But Lane Kiffin made the case that when you look at the metrics, like the strength of record, strength of schedule, all these different things that tend to favor the SEC yearly, that A&M should be number one in the country. I just want to ask you your thoughts on that, right? Because you could look at those metrics, but on the other side, I know Indiana and Ohio State fans would say, okay, yeah, our strength of schedule is down, but we're beating teams by an average, Ohio State, for example, beating teams by an average of 27 points. So, like, you can only play who's in front of you, and when you're beating the hell out of everyone who's in front of you in the Big Ten Conference, you should probably get credit for that.
I agree, and at that point, it's like, what metrics do you want to look at? Because, again, any of them, a lot of them are going to say that Ohio State is number one, but you can
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Can also look at some that favor that strength of schedule or whatever you want to portray for the SEC that'll say, well, Texas A&M's undefeated. They're 9-0. They've played Missouri. They've played LSU both on the road, even though LSU's taken a massive step back. If you put them in a different conference, they'd be atop whatever team.
One at Notre Dame, begin the year. Let's not forget
Notre Dame
that one.
On the road. So if anybody wants to make the case that Texas A&M is number one, I'm fine with that because we still have three data points to go. And for Texas A&M's point of view, they're going to have a really big one at the end of the regular season when they play at Texas. Even if Texas were to, say, lose to Georgia this week, that's still going to be on the road, big rivalry game. That's going to be a huge showcase game, Thanksgiving weekend. So Texas A&M is going to have more than enough ample opportunities, and with an SEC championship game, if they're to win out here, then it'll take care of itself. So
right.
I get why Lane Kiffin would make that case. But at the same time, for Lane Kiffin, I'm also like, hey, man, you're playing a team you guys lost to last year, and it was the reason. It was basically the final nail in the coffin for you guys being out of the playoff, and then you add the extra little spice to it this year where everybody's saying you're about to be the head coach for this team. And it's great that Lane Kiffin is so open and free, and we love our coaches and athletes to – be provocative in front of the microphone, but it has a chance to bite you, and it's done it before to Lane Kiffin.
Now, you said this in so many words, but my take, I call it my take, even though I think it's a fact with what Lane Kiffin had to say. He's basically creating a bunch of arguments out there for SEC and Big Ten fans that just become circular, and they never end anywhere. I mean, it's almost...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.